Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Howie Lim. And even before the COVID-19 pandemic roiled labor markets across the world, structural shifts, such as the increase in demand for technological skills, were well underway, with many upskilling in order to prepare themselves for the fast-changing digital age. Now, with remote and flexible working arrangements set in place by organizations as a result of safe distancing measures, the world's digital transformation has quickly accelerated by what economist David Auter has referred to as an automation forcing event. However, it remains to be seen how the labor market will respond this year when these initial government and organizational initiatives taper off. Thus, as the world transitions into the new year, what are some of the key trends around education and upskilling that we can expect to see in 2021? Aziza Shireen is Managing Director for Asia at General Assembly. She joins us with her insights. Aziza, always a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you for having me, Howie. Great to speak with you again.
It's been a time and lots has happened, obviously.
That's totally true. What was it, mid last year when we last spoke?
Yeah. Let's first talk about that impact of an increasingly hybrid and automated workforce.
Who would have thought at the start of January 2020 that we'd be here right now? So I think, in the past year, there's definitely been a lot more acceleration of this automation, but it's not something that's new to us. So just now, you mentioned David Auter. I love his TED Talk. And one of the things that he actually mentions in it is this case of the ATMs when they were first introduced in the 1970s. Everyone was like, oh no, what are going to happen to bank teller jobs? Because now a machine can give you the cash that you need. And what he found was that, the average number of bank tellers per branch may have gone down, but across America as a whole, they saw that the number of bank tellers being employed actually increased because it made it cheaper for banks to open up more branches. And the current bank tellers right now, they were doing more high value work. It's what we now call relationship banking. You no longer go to your bank to get cash, right? You do that on your mobile phone, you do that at the ATM. What you see your relationship manager for is to understand more about, your investment products, your credit cards and your loan products. So I think what we're going to see is more high value work. And last year, what was interesting or jarring is that there was an acceleration in it, and there is going to be short-term pain felt by people. The World Economic Forum estimated that about 85 million jobs were going to be lost in the next 5 years, but 97 million new jobs are going to be created. And the kind of jobs that are going to be lost are things that can be automated, things like, data entry, clerical work, etc. So I think what the year has kind of put more emphasis on is really the need for helping people to discover what the next phase in their career is and helping them to reskill and move on to new careers.
But talk to us about what firms can do, though, to help upskill their employees, who are in those danger jobs of being replaced, I think, by automation.
Definitely. I think, one of the things that happens generally when there's a financial crisis is that there's a few line items in a P&L that get cut, and learning and development budgets are usually one of the first to go. But what is interesting about this time that we've seen with clients is that we've actually had clients double down on their budgets for reskilling because they realized that many of them actually had to go digital very fast in order to be able to service their customers. And they realized that they needed the kind of teams who would have the capabilities to do this work. And they've kind of like seen the value of why it's important to invest in their own teams. One of the things that I would recommend to business leaders, is to work very closely with their L&D teams because you can't have the learning and development team operating in a vacuum. It's really important that the L&D team understands what's the business priorities for this year and beyond. What are they trying to achieve? Where are they trying to pivot so that they can figure out what kind of talent do we need and how can we grow that talent internally? And the other couple of things that are top of mind that I've seen for business leaders and HR leaders right now is two areas. One, we're all working from home right now. This is the world's largest remote working experiment. And we've seen that it's possible. And before this pandemic, a lot of companies used to be like, it's actually quite impossible to do this job at home. And we've seen that that's not quite true. what we're going to find is that when we all can come back to work, there is going to be a greater demand from employees for more flexible work arrangements. And that's something that businesses need to be prepared for, because it's actually good for business because it helps your employees who are either parents or caregivers. So it's something that businesses need to be stepping up to. The second area that, you know, is quite heartwarming that I've seen a few businesses get involved in is in supporting the mental health of their employees. In my professional career, I've not seen things like anxiety and nervousness talked about at work as much as I've seen in the past year. It's really great that we're kind of removing the stigma around those things. For example, closer to home at GA, you know, we conduct regular trainings on how can we be more mentally resilient. We make sure that our insurance covers therapy, and we've also made sure to do mental health days off.
Sounds also like employees will be more hands-on, I suppose, for their upskilling needs. Beyond them, someone else needs to be involved too, right? I mean, how much should employers be involved? Government should be involved.
Definitely. I think there's definitely a certain amount of input that is needed from the individual, and we've seen that there is an appetite for it. So for example, last year, in addition to our career changing and upskilling courses, we ran a lot of short workshops that are more introductory, that are bite-sized, that are great for people to learn about a particular new function. And in 2020 alone, we saw about 103,000 people from Singapore sign up for that. And what that tells me is that there is an appetite. And what is great is that it is being supported by the government. So last year, Singapore's government, they rolled out a $2 billion jobs and skills package. And as part of this, you know, employers are able to, you know, hire people under things like the SG United traineeship programs and the mid-career pathways. And also, if someone was thinking about changing their careers, there are programs available, like, for example, the Tech Immersion and Placement Program by the Infocom Media Development Authority. So, for example, if someone was thinking about taking up a course at General Assembly, and if they're a Singaporean or a PR, they're actually eligible for about 70 to 90% subsidies on their course fees. And the other thing that we've seen is that employers are actually starting to do more training for their employees. There's a lot more emphasis being given on growing your team versus always hiring. It's about the difference between buying versus growing, right? You could either hire all of your team externally whenever you need a new type of talent, or you could grow really, you know, people who understand your business, who might just need an uplift in their skill sets.
We're speaking with Aziza Shireen, Managing Director for Asia at General Assembly. Aziza, a lot's been talked about human capital and skills becoming one of the most important business assets. One would assume businesses already knew that, or are some just getting clued into this?
That's a good question, Howie. You know, I think businesses were always aware of that, but what we're seeing is more of an investment in your people. You know, I think it goes twofold. One is in terms of how can you support this person to do the best job possible, you know, in terms of taking care of their mental health, allowing more flexible work from home benefits, allowing them to fulfill their obligations as an individual while they're still being your employee, right? So I think we're seeing businesses kind of play a more caring role in employees' lives, or at least it's something that employees, especially in the 20s to 30s age group in tech, they're kind of expecting it more from their employers. The second thing that we're seeing, you know, companies wake up to is that this whole, you know, the most talked about word, I think, last year was digital transformation, right? And that really accelerated during COVID. And what we're seeing employers realize is that, you know, they need the kind of skill sets. For example, they need coders, they need data scientists, they need user experience designers and product managers and digital marketers. And the thing is, if you were to look at the market, there is not enough talent in the market for that, you know, because every other company needs this talent as well. So what they realized is that you could either poach from people where, you know, there's just going to be, you're just going to have to keep paying more and more for that talent. And it's going to become like what's happening in Silicon Valley, where talent is very overpriced. Or they realize that we can grow our people And I think that whole build versus buy mindset is what we're seeing shift in employers. Previously, you know, if you were going to staff up a team, you might decide, okay, I'm going to hire entirely externally. But now what we're seeing from employers is that they're more open to providing opportunities for their current team. For example, there is a large insurer that we were working with recently, and they were thinking about restructuring about 200 to 300 jobs. And at the same time, they were looking at hiring the similar number of tech workers. So what we did was that we went in and we did reskilling courses for their current team. And we were actually able to get them hired into these new roles within the insurer. And what was great is that these people understood the business. All they needed was a refresh on their skill sets. And I think that's something that employers are being more open to. The third thing I would say is different now than when I had first started out in my career is probably that employers are more willing to hire based on skills versus paper qualifications. You know, they've kind of like seen that, for example, if you were to go to a user experience design interview, you know, there's going to be rounds of testing. They're going to expect you to do a few projects. And the same goes for like a coding interview where you might be asked to do a coding test. And what employers look for is more about, does this person have the skills? Can they do the job? And this helps them in two ways. One is that it helps them widen the net of their talent versus hiring from just certain particular backgrounds. And the second thing is that it allows for more diversity because one of the things that a lot of employers have talked about is that their tech teams tend to look a certain way and they lack diversity. And skills-based hiring actually helps employers widen that net more.
How possible would it be for a smaller business to do something like that, though, Aziza?
What we've seen is that it's definitely possible. You know, for a smaller business, one of the hard things would be about, you know, letting go of someone for like 3 months to take a career-changing course. But what we've seen a lot of small businesses do is send their team members to our part-time programs. You know, whether that is an upskilling program that's shorter or a reskilling program. One of the things that we realized in the past few years is that, you know, we have had both employers as well as individuals tell us that, hey, you know, I want to reskill into, you know, this tech skill, but I do not want to quit my job in order to reskill. So what we've done is that we now have extended programs. These are also supported by the Tech Immersion and Placement funding under the IMDA. And that allows for someone to keep their existing job as well as take on these courses in the evenings or in the weekends. And what we've seen is that employers are more open to having some flexible work arrangements when someone is going through a course like that. And I would say that for small businesses, it's even more important to be agile.
So here's the million-dollar question, Aziza. What are the experts learning in their own time?
I think that would really depend on what someone's job is. You know, one of the things that we've seen is really popular among our courses is definitely data analytics and data science, because data analytics is actually a skill that is not just needed by people who are doing business intelligence or, you know, your title is a data analyst. It is used by, say, for example, people like me when I need to crunch numbers for a P&L. It's used by marketers when they want to figure out the efficiency and efficacy of their marketing. It is used by finance folks. So we've actually seen a rise in the number of people who want to pick up data literacy and data skills. The other skill sets that we've seen on a rise as well is software engineering. That's been quite a steady sort of demand, especially in the last year. What we've seen is that a lot of businesses that were, you know, offline or they were doing their sales offline, they've now gone online and they need web developers in-house. And what we've seen is that there's been a demand for web developers. And one of our most popular courses at the moment is the software engineering course where we teach JavaScript. And the other one that we've seen popular in recent times is user experience design. You know, as we all use more our phones and digital products more, you know, I'm sure you've noticed this. There are some apps that are just beautiful and just so intuitive to use. And there are some
and
where
some
you're like,
not so much.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And the people behind it is definitely all of your user experience experienced designers and your product managers, so that if you're going to be using a banking app, you don't want to be banging your head against the wall. You want to make sure that you're having a great experience. So we're seeing those roles go up in Singapore as well.
Aziza Shireen, Managing Director for Asia at General Assembly. Aziza, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Howie.
This is Korea 360 on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.